Doom do 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 do.
Hi, plant friends. Welcome to episode 95 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Plant friends, welcome back to Bloom and Grow Radio. I hope you had the most wonderfully planty week, plant friends. I am so freaking excited about this episode to bring it to you. We are so lucky that the teacher of my Soil Science 101 class at the New York Botanical Garden agreed to come on the podcast today to help me break down what I've learned in class. Her name is Dr. Anya Paltseva, and she is so lovely, so smart, such a joy, and we're so lucky that she entertained my overly eager, nerdy brain in this conversation. And plant friends, I'm going to be honest with you, I talk a lot more in this episode than normal, but it's just because it was so fun for me to relive class with her. And I really just feel so empowered by all of the things that I'm learning in these virtual courses that I'm taking with the New York Botanical Garden. And I just love talking about it with people. And Billy is getting pretty bored of me. So it was fun to nerd out with Anya and learn so much. And I really hope that our conversation helps you look at the soil that you're putting your plants in and the concept of drainage differently. And I hope that it gives you a broader, deeper understanding of what these words actually mean. I don't want to spoil it, but I got to say, I think our conversation on capillary action is one of my five most proudest moments in the 95 episodes of the show, because it was such a light bulb moment for me in the midst of talking with her. But I will let you hear it in the midst of the episode. Definitely make sure you listen to the end, because there's knowledge bombs left and right. More exciting news, I'm such a nerd that I actually made a YouTube video that accompanies this podcast all about the perched water table and what I've learned about drainage. So I actually had to give a presentation in soil science class on drainage for houseplants. So I turned that presentation into a YouTube video. So make sure you go to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show on YouTube and check that video out. It's super nerdy and I do a lot of experiments. And it's very fun and silly. And make sure you subscribe to the show because I'm obviously always going to be a podcaster first, but the video has been really fun and I'm putting a lot of time and energy into creating video content for you guys that I think would be beautiful partners to these episodes. So go check it out. Thank you so much to our newest Patreon Plant Friend supporters. So many of you have signed up in the last couple of weeks, and I'm thankful for each and every one of you. Luanda Diaz-Santiago, Hunter Bonar, Hunter Elizabeth, Lou Plants, and Megan. Thank you, Plant Friends. Thank you for signing up to help Bloom and Grow financially on a monthly basis. If you might be interested in supporting Bloom and Grow Radio on a monetary basis every month, it's less than a cup of coffee at a fancy coffee shop. Go check the link in the show notes. The Patreon Plant Friends help me pay for my editor, produce YouTube videos, think of extra fun content. And if you become a Patreon supporter, you get the password to the super secret plantiest corner of the internet, the Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group. I also just want to say thank you to the New York Botanical Garden for letting me take these classes with them. I am learning so much. And plant friends, NYBG has made all of their courses for the remainder of the summer online. So all of the courses that I've taken with them, and I can't recommend them enough, Fundamentals of Gardening, Soil Science 101, and the Intro to Plant Science, they're all available online throughout the rest of the summer, as well as so many different courses. A course on magic mushrooms, a course on why trees talk to each other, plant identification, botanical watercolor, anything planty, they have it. And they also have their NYBG at Home online hub where they do virtual tours of the garden, virtual experiences, videos for kids, everything you could think of. They have an online educational hub. So if you are needing a dose of plantiness, go check it out. The link is in the show notes. Thank you so much to Espoma Organics for sponsoring today's episode. Plant friends, Espoma Organics is a family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. And it's gardening season, plant friends, so if you haven't tried Espoma already, it might be time to. I just spent the weekend at Fiella Farm planting up my mom's tomato garden, the tomato patch, and we used Espoma Biotone Starter, which has mycorrhizae in it, which are fungi that grow symbiotically with the roots and help plants do a myriad of things, from help with water absorption, nutrient absorption, warding off pests. It's amazing. It's a great product. We're super excited about using it, and we'll be following up with Tomato Tone throughout the growing season. Whether you're needing indoor or outdoor fertilizer for the growing season, potting or garden soil to start your gardens or to help your plant babies thrive, single ingredient amendments or horticultural sprays, Espoma Organics has the organic, amazing gardening solution for you. And on top of it all, they're an awesome third generation family run company with a commitment to the world with 100% solar powered plant and eco-friendly packaging. I just love them. To learn more about their organic indoor and outdoor products for us plant people, visit espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or you can click the link in the show notes to go to the Bloom and Grow Espoma Amazon store to see my favorite picks. Once again, that's espoma.com or the link in the show notes to check out my picks on Amazon. Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. Okay, plant friends, enough intro. I'm so excited about this conversation. I'm so thankful to Dr. Potsava for joining us. So here she is. Anya, I'm so excited to have you finally on the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast. Welcome.
Hi, Maria. Thank you so much for having me. I'm also very excited since the day we met a couple of months ago. And it's so interesting to be part of this plant community. So thank you for having me today.
Yeah, we met at a party that Nick threw, Farmer Nick. And the minute I met you, I was like, oh, you're going to come on my podcast. And then I coincidentally signed up for Soil Science 101 at New York Botanical Garden and then put the connection that you were the teacher.
The universe was speaking.
Right. The universe was speaking to us. And so then I got to write the New York Botanical Garden and be like, you'll never guess, but Anya's already planning on coming on the show. And we had an amazing 7 weeks, very in-depth soil science class. It started right at the beginning of the pandemic and was the first basic like 7 weeks of the pandemic. And it was really nice every Tuesday to have that structured into my week, to show up with the same people on Zoom and learn together. It was a kind of a smaller class, so we all kind of really got to know each other, which was so nice. But it really, that class like kind of got me through the pandemic. It felt like I was enriching my brain and I was growing, even though I felt like so trapped in New York City. So thank you for being a part of that.
No, thank you. It was so interesting to be to teach online soils and be able to demonstrate how to perform simple tests on the kitchen table. It was a really fun experience, and I'm so open that everyone in the class was engaging and participatory and really made it very active.
Yeah,
and everyone presented such cool discussion and findings.
It was so fun. Yeah, because I guess we were the pilot virtual class.
Yes, first one.
Because we were virtual, we had people in California, people in upstate New York. So when it came to soil, we actually got to have really interesting conversations because we were all working off of different soils. And you would literally, I will always laugh because you would give us these assignments that we had to like go collect soil leading up to the class. And then we would do these like soil science experiments with coffee filters and mason jars. Like we had to like make our own labs. But I'll always remember like, it was a Monday night and I was like, oh my God, I forgot to get soil samples. And I had to like run outside on my New York City street with a little shovel that I had. And I was just digging up soil from like the small little patch of soil on my street. And I looked insane. And the garbage men came to come pick up the garbage. And they were looking at me like I was burying a dead body. Like, cause you know, it was 10:30 at night and I was just like digging in the soil.
Yeah, people don't notice there is a soil, so he didn't make a connection that you were doing any soil work.
Exactly. He probably didn't even connect it. But your class, the at-home labs were so fun. And the soil, also so informational. I mean, like the soil tests that we did. But I'm so excited that you agreed that we could kind of do an overview of some of the stuff that really blew my mind. It was interesting for me taking the class because the Soil Science 101 is definitely about outdoor soils and the difference and how soils vary, where soils originate from, how we understand them, how we measure them. And so as a houseplant parent with only 9 square feet of balcony space, and I only do container gardening, which is also potted soil, it was really interesting for me to have to draw a lot of parallels between the real garden and the real soil and then what we're doing in containers in our homes. It's definitely made me get way more excited to go in my mom's garden because I feel like I have this like better understanding, and it's made me very excited to buy a house and have a garden eventually. So I was thinking we could kind of talk about those parallels.
Totally, yeah. It was actually very interesting to have you, and I think you were one of few students who were entirely indoor farmer. And typically I have like landscape designers or architects or just gardeners. And it was really interesting to actually see this connection. And like, as you mentioned, people from like upstate or California, and you were like house plants. And I think it enriched the experience of the class.
Oh, good. Because sometimes I would be feeling like I was asking the dumbest questions. Because when you're an only indoor houseplant person, you just don't have the experience of understanding loam or sand, or you don't have the thought of contaminated, you know, having to deal with contaminated soils, which holy moly, learning about New York City soils is terrifying. But yeah, so I'm happy that you say it was enriching and not annoying, because I was like constantly stopping class asking questions.
Oh, I love people asking questions. Otherwise, it's just like, are people getting it, or it's so confusing they are, you know, don't want even to ask? No, it's always fun.
I am never afraid to ask a dumb question, ever.
No, it's not a dumb question. It's just we all have different experiences, right? And you have like education in music, and like ask me anything, I will be like, I don't know anything. Exactly. So it's like we just have expertise in different fields. So there's no ever a dumb question. It's better to ask.
And we're lifelong learners. We're always trying to grow and learn new things. And that's the fun hobby of plant care, is that you could have a botany degree from the fanciest college ever and university ever, and you're still not going to understand the plant kingdom. Like, there's always something about the plant kingdom to learn.
Yeah.
Gardening or, you know, horticulture, like whatever you're studying. So that is something very cool about plants. So Anna, you're a doctor, Dr. Paltseva, my soil scientist teacher. And I'd love, before we dive in, to talk about how you became the plant lady, or I guess the soil lady that you are, and why you developed such an interest in soil to the point that you now have a doctorate in it.
Yeah, I think it's a family trait, and I didn't realize it, that it's in my blood, in my roots as a plant, until like last year someone asked me, what did you do when you were 8? And I was like, I was playing with dirt. I made different pigments, different mixtures, textures with the soil in my parents' garden in south of Russia, where I'm from. And my parents are agronomists. So the entire life they grew professionally and studied actually for that crops, different crops. And nowadays my dad has a, what we consider in America as a farm. He grows wheat, like bread, because it's one of the main grains in Russia. And they were the first ones to educate me about agriculture. And we always grow our food, our own produce, because it's part of culture in Russia. And they gave me my first professional education, since they are professionals. And I love playing with soils since I was young. And then I grew up in the countryside, surrounded by pristine environment. And I really wanted for people to have the same experience as I did. And it inspired me to study ecology. And my personal mission is to clean up the earth from pollution. Mm-hmm. Because I have this image in my head, like at the bottom of our property, we have like a stream and birds singing and mm-hmm. the trees are growing and it's so clean and nice. And I want more people to experience that, as well as the taste of vegetables and fruits that my parents grow. And it's just nothing like that when you grow your own local produce and it actually tastes and smells very differently what you buy from a store. Mm-hmm. And many people living in the cities losing this, or they actually don't know such thing exists because they didn't have this growing up. So that's my mission as an adult, now as a professional, to bring this to, back to people. And this love for ecology and nature eventually brought me to study soils. And I did this in Brooklyn College in New York after I moved to New York 9 years ago. I worked in a lab. And some of you people, probably listeners, send soils to our Brooklyn College Soil Lab, where we test for multiple properties of soils. And that's where I got my first training as a research assistant. And then it's like, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a professor and take it to the next level. And that was my focus of my PhD research. But I really focused on pollution, on soil contamination and remediation, because I want to find a way how to fix this problem. And in New York City, we cannot run of these contamination issues as being one of the most contaminated cities in the country.
It's horrifying.
There are ways how to amend it and remediate it. So when people get scared, there are ways how we can fix it.
Totally. And I loved learning about, we had a whole day of learning about that in your class. But one of the most fun facts I learned from, I think, the entire time is in our soil science class is that people talk about how delicious the food is grown in Italy, but all soils come from three different types of rock, one being lava rock, and lava rock has the most nutrients in it. And Italy's soils are very nutrient rich because of the volcanic activity. So the food grown in Italy literally has different nutrient composition because of the soils. And so when you say the tomatoes taste better in Italy, they literally taste better in Italy because they're growing in more in volcanic ash, basically, like in, you know, the remnants of.
Yep, it has the whole periodic table, anything you want. But plants only need certain number of elements or nutrients. It's up to 17 essential elements as they need. And yeah, this Italian soil's fresh volcanic, or actually not that fresh, but relatively speaking, geologically speaking, it's the soil is developing and it's releasing nutrients and from this lava rocks, or igneous rocks, and the plants take it up and they're happy with that because it has everything they need. And when we grow food not in very fertile, nutritious soil, then our food doesn't have the flavor. So and sometimes, like when people over-fertilize something or in hydroponics, if they don't follow the perfect mixture, they start feeling different flavors. Like, why is that? It's because of the fertilizer. So like this, what we add to the soil will affect the flavor and the vitamin content, because the vitamins, the nutrients.
It's so interesting. So soil, I mean, let's talk about, what do you think the difference between soil and dirt is?
I love this question. I always ask people at the beginning of the class, what is the difference? Because very often it's used interchangeably, but actually there is a difference. And the dirt is what we have on our clothes, on the fingernails, on our shoes. This is soil particles outside of soil. Mm-hmm. But soil is an evolving natural body that is full of life. It has so many microorganisms that really a handful of soil has more organisms than people on this planet. How cool is that? And it has air, it has water, it has minerals, organic matter in different forms. So it's way more complex than any dirt. Mm-hmm. And really, people should use the soil as a soil, and the dirt is, it's not really applicable to soil.
Now, when you say, I love the thought that soil is a living, evolving organism, you know, it's a living, evolving, changing thing, just like the plants that grow in it are living, yep. evolving, changing things. Would you say that that's the same for the potting soil that we use? Are there organisms and microbes in our soils, in our potting soil, in our containers?
Yeah, definitely it's not sterilized. It's not sterile, and it would have plant-soil relationships. It's just not going to be as biodiverse as in open ecosystem outside, outdoor landscape. It will be more monoculture of bacteria or like certain fungi that associated with the plant you're growing. Mm-hmm. And you will not have insects or like many tiny organisms, definitely less than outside, but you will still have. And you don't really want to have the same biodiversity inside. Otherwise, you're going to have all these bugs and pathogens and
right.
insects and like all these flies. And yeah, it's you shouldn't have, you know. So, and sometimes for container gardening, for pots, people even sterilize the soil in order to avoid this potential pests inside of the house. So it definitely has interactions, and you can observe this with your, you know, maybe take a lens or something, see the interrelationship between roots and soil and aggregates. It's not the same. It's less diverse, but still there are symbiotic relationship between the soil and plants for sure.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing, because we're going to talk a lot about drainage in this conversation we have, because I feel like drainage and soil in houseplants is the biggest conversation ever. But something to think about, outdoors in soil, there are larger bugs, beetles, worms, things that you can see with your naked eye that are part of this living microbiome in the soil. Microbiome, right?
Yep.
They are crawling and burrowing and moving around in the soil, and they're making air pockets that the water go through to water the plants. And that is something that doesn't happen in our houseplants. We are going to have microscopic fungi and different microbes in that way that are going to be living in our containers, but we are not going to have those beetles and those worms that are making the bigger holes. So it's important. That's why drainage is even more important for us. And also in the houseplant world, you talk about this concept of aerating your soil and whether or not you should, but it's easier in the houseplant world for like your soil to get really compacted. So if you've had soil, if you've had a plant in a pot for a long time, that soil sometimes you can notice starts to get compacted and peel away from the pot. And it gets so compacted that the water actually can't even penetrate the soil, and it just goes right around the sides.
Yeah, it becomes hydrophobic. It's afraid of water.
Yes, hydrophobic. So you have to go in, and I will do this. I mean, this, it's very like people in the houseplant world say, don't do this, say do it. But if I notice that my soil gets compacted, I'll go in with a chopstick or a pen, and I will kind of gently nudge the soil free a little bit just to kind of give it an opportunity that when I water it, water goes in. Or I'll bottom water it, because sometimes I feel like bottom watering is a way to kind of help it break up.
Absolutely.
But that was a difference that, you know, that became very clear to me in terms of how like the soil, when you view soil as a living thing, that's a big difference in houseplants versus outdoors. Another thing that your class has really turned me on to within the houseplants is really understanding in the potting soil that I'm buying what's in it.
Yes.
Because the soil that I use and the fertilizer that I'm now trying to use has mycorrhizae in it. And that's something that we've talked a lot about. So do you want to talk a little bit about what mycorrhizae are and how they help our plants and how they live in the soil?
Yeah, so it's basically a symbiotic relationship between fungi and the plant roots. So they would find in the rhizosphere, in natural environment, it's the top layer in the soil, and where most of organisms live, it's close to the surface, so there's exchange with the air. And fungi would have a symbiotic relationship, as I mentioned, with plants by providing them with nutrients. And in return, plants will give them sugar to feed on. And also fungi can deliver water in the dry situations when plants cannot reach water. Fungi can grow into different directions, deep or like laterally in the sides, and basically extend the roots of the plant and deliver water so plant can survive. So this goes both ways. If there are enough nutrients in soil, plants are not going to have this relationship with fungi. And basically, fungi will die away or at least reduce in its amount. So this is the importance of not using too much fertilizer so plants don't get lazy, you know, and the same like don't water it so they actually develop deeper roots. And to have this symbiotic relationship is really important because it also helps to structure the soil and hold like aggregates, release nutrients, make it available for other generations of plants. So the mycorrhizae is super beneficial. And definitely this, like when you buy amendments or soils, see if it contains mycorrhizae, some beneficial bacteria and fungi. Nowadays, it's all say on the label.
Yeah, I'm looking at labels differently after this because also, you know, now I notice when my soil label has earthworm casings on it because earthworm casings are like the skin that earthworms shed and that's going to be in soils outdoors. And actually, that brings us up. So, okay, the recipe for soil. That always blows my mind a little bit because, okay, it's been a minute since soil science, so let's see if I get it right. It's basically 50% air and water, 5% organic matter, and then 45% stone.
Minerals, rocks.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy to think that soil should be 25% air. Like, it's crazy when you think about soil is 25% air and 25% water, or should be on a good day.
Yeah.
And then you hear a lot about compost, organic matter, amending the soil with compost and blah, 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 and that it's really only supposed to be 5%.
Yeah, at least 5%. It considers as to have high quality. It's enough for agriculture. Mm-hmm. And many times I see in New York in community gardens, they love planting in compost. Mm-hmm. But it's not ideal as well. Don't overuse this, the compost benefits, because it can create disservices, not just benefits. So there is no like upper limit how much you need to have in the soil, but maybe like 20% of organic matter is good. And over time, it will drop. So there is no need to add it twice a year or every other year if you have enough of organic matter. And that will change based on the season or based on the landscape where you are, different climate, it will break down faster. So you need to monitor it. But it's not necessary to keep adding it and adding it and adding it. Mm-hmm. So something people need to keep in mind because it will loosen up the soil too much. It becomes too loose. It will be blown away and water will not be retained if it's just pure organic matter. And also it creates leaching of nutrients. Compost contains nutrients, so this creates imbalance. Some nutrients will be stronger than others and basically kick out other nutrients. And this way we don't have a balance, which is bad. And it will get into groundwater. Likely in New York City, we don't drink groundwater, but in the locations where groundwater is one of the main sources of drinking supply, then it's really something to be cautious about. We don't want to have it's going to groundwater. Of course, compost are not as enriched as fertilizers, but still, it's something to keep in mind. So our compost should be added, but not used as a substitution for soil.
Right. Now, it shouldn't be your potting mix or your primary garden soil. It should be amended into the soil.
Right. And the organisms have a capacity how much they can handle. So a compost is like food for them. Mm-hmm. And if you just like keep adding compost and like this only certain amount of bacteria, they can't grow more than there's like, you know, more than our environment can handle, especially if it's a container, then it just, it stopped working. It's there, but it doesn't benefit organisms anymore.
Now, speaking of organisms, I'm thinking about you and mycorrhizae. So I've seen people write me about this before. What about when in a houseplant pot, a little fungi pops up? Like sometimes I feel like I've seen like little mushrooms pop up, or like I have a pot right now. I have a plant that's been in the same soil for a year or two, and it has like a little layer of white, almost looking like the beginnings of a mushroom, like some sort of white mossy layer on top of it. Do you think that's bad? Do you think
that I wouldn't know? Well, is it happening because it's oversaturated water standing, or it's like a normal soil, a dry, and just fungi growing in it?
Maybe once it was oversaturated and then maybe fungi started. I mean, it's not, I don't overwater it.
Is it possible this, was it the potted soil, or it's possible that it came from the garden that just like it was like a mushroom spore?
Potting soil.
Very interesting. Yeah, I don't know. It's need to read on the label why it's has like quite the mushrooms in it. Maybe it is a type of fungi that, yeah, creates this.
Maybe fungi, because maybe it did get overwatered or something, and the presence of moisture like made some, or it could be mold. It could be some sort of mold that's grown.
Yeah, because I mean, typically outside when you see like white web on like mulch growing, you know, sometimes people put mulch and then like, you pick up a piece of mulch, it's like nice white web. That's a really good sign. It's a fungi that is growing, it's nice, and it will break down organic matter, release nutrients to the soil. Since it's a closed environment, it's a little bit different. Like you need to think where the fungi is coming from. And maybe it is a mold, or maybe it was just in a potting mix and it's just like part of the soil, and it was beneficial, favorable condition for it to thrive in your apartment and started to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so interesting. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, That drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. Okay, so let's talk about drainage now, knowing and understanding the recipe that soil is supposed to be 25% water and 25% air. So of course, when we go to selecting or creating our own potting mixes, we have to take into consideration that we have to create soil that can have 25% air pockets. So why is drainage so important for plants, in or outdoors?
Yeah, so the drainage is important because if we have too much water, then the roots will rot. And probably people experienced it if the water was standing for too long, like flooded. And even though water is there, plants, if it's oversaturated, plants cannot take it. Roots cannot take it without having any oxygen in the soil. Mm-hmm. So it's really important for water to go down due to gravity and have pores filled with air and water. Only in that condition, plant roots can take it and use it for their need. It also only in that condition when nutrients or like fertilizer can dissolve and being uptaken by plants as well. Otherwise, it will just stay there. It can release toxins which are harmful to the plants. They will build up and eventually cause some disease or even plant death. And the drainage is also important because, especially like talking about contamination, in the sandy soils with good drainage, less likely we will have metals that stick to the particles. They will be drained down. And sand by itself is the mineral that has, chemically speaking, zero charge. So it does not have any affinity for metal to be absorbed on the surface. As clay soils that they have bad drainage and they have negative charge, they will hold more metals that typically positively charged, and it will just accumulate and build up on this clay soils. So good drainage typically found in sandy soils that have a good aeration, large pores, and water just going down. Of course, having too good drainage is also has side effects because you need to water it more often and you need to fertilize it more often. Mm-hmm. So that's just another practice.
Quick fun fact. So soil is made up of sand, silt, and clay. Those are the minerals that can be mm-hmm. a part of it. And sand is the biggest particle, meaning the drainage is the fastest. Mm-hmm. And clay, people talk about having too much clay in their gardens. Clay is the smallest particle but has the largest surface area. Yep. So because it has the largest surface area, it absorbs water. It holds water more. So clay is an issue because clay retains water, and that's where you have issues in your garden with your garden not draining and your plants dying.
Very good.
Star student.
Oh my God. You earned your A+.
I earned my A+. I know. I did well.
You did.
But I studied. I loved you. I mean, I really nerded out in your class. But
well, because I love teaching you. So yeah. And I always get such amazing students who are professionals and we become friends. So it's really teaching you at NYBG. It's never for money. It's always for the network. Mm-hmm. And having these professional students really enriched my personal professional experience.
Yeah, because it's so many gardeners. I mean, we had several like professional gardeners in our class, which was so fun to talk to them about. Okay, so drainage. Obviously, we don't have to worry about that with our potting mixes because
we don't need to worry how much clay is in our potting mixes. There's no clay in our potting mix.
Yeah.
Potting mixes in general are a lot of sphagnum moss. There's a lot of perlite often, which is like puffed lava mm-hmm. rock. That really helps with drainage. Then there's the portion of organic matter. So can we dive in a little bit into like the science of how water like runs through the soil? So part of it is that surface area. Clay is going to retain it because it's got that larger surface area versus the smaller surface area. But mm-hmm. what do we need to understand from a scientific perspective about drainage?
Yeah, so drainage definitely depends on the particle size, because particle size, as you just mentioned, sand versus clay, will affect the pore size. So large particles like in sandy soils will be associated with large pores, which allow for water penetration, so good drainage. While clay soils will have small pores, small particles, and it will hold the water like sponge. It will retain it in sponge. So ideally, we want to have mix of sand and clay together to have this mix of large and small pores.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, in sandy soils, large pores will have a gravitational water, meaning water will move downward due to gravity.
Mm-hmm.
While in clay soil, predominant force would be capillary. So it works against gravity. Water from the top or rain, for example, water will move laterally in the clay as much as it can mm-hmm. in any direction it wants. And only after it saturates it laterally, it will go down due to gravity. So and that will take a while.
So that's like when we water our plants, there's going to be a pool of water that spreads around the whole top of
exactly.
the soil before then the whole thing drains down.
Exactly. And this is important for gardeners who garden outside to know soil texture, to know how much sand or clay they have.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you just described, if they have this type of clay soil, they need to water it like every other row, for example. So don't have to do it as frequent distance-wise as sandy soil, because in sandy soil, water just going down vertically.
Right down, because it drains faster. But with
exactly.
clay, it's going to move more laterally because mm-hmm. of how much more it retains. So the concept of bottom watering is big in the houseplant community, because the thought is you put your plant in a pot with a hole in the bottom in a larger bowl of water, and through the hole at the bottom of the pot, water, the soil will wick up just the right amount of water for it to be properly saturated. So what's scientifically happening there?
Yeah, so that happens due to, again, capillary forces or capillary rise. It's typically because it's rising up. And it happens due to cohesion and adhesion. Those are
yes,
two
my favorite words.
Yeah, so it's like physics term. So adhesion is when part of water is attached to, let's say, clay particle or I don't know, like a wall, like a tube, to something physical. And then cohesion is the attraction between water molecules. So first we need water to be attached to the surface of the channels in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And then in between in this channel, the water will rise up. But adhesion is really what gives this first water rise. Water attracts to the walls, and then due to cohesion, it will still rise in between. It's really important to have small size of those pores or channels, because the narrow the tube then or channel, the more up it will go, the more it will rise further up. And if it's very wide, then there is not enough tension to bring it up. In sandy soils, you're not going to see very high capillary rise. But in clay soils, eventually you will see it will go up. And when you mentioned earlier about your soil, like organic soil or peat soil, sometimes in house plants, when it's overdried and it's like you try to water it from on top and doesn't like it, right? Like the water is just like going like burst away and it doesn't want to be saturated. So to put the pot in a tray of water for a day would really help to saturate it from the bottom. And due to the capillary rise, eventually it will saturate it and it gets to the surface. So for those who have this, and typically happens if you have like potted mixes for a few months, not watered, and yeah, you want to use
it
again.
Impacted.
So just water it from the bottom and it won't be hydrophobic anymore.
Okay. Adhesion cohesion. I have a pot with a cactus in it, or let's not say cactus, but I have a pot of really nice aerated potting soil. So part of that is sand, part of it is organic matter, part of it is maybe like even little pieces of bark. So I put the plant in a bowl of water. So adhesion is the water attaching to the sand or the bark or the whatever else is made up of the potting mix. And then cohesion is the other water molecules being attracted to the molecule that's already attached and then pulling itself up through the pore space.
Perfect. Yep.
So you want that water. So slowly but surely those water. So it's almost like if you, this is the image that just came to mind. I wonder if it makes sense. You know, when you see like those competitions where like a bunch of people have to do an obstacle course and like one person jumps up the wall and then like pulls the other person up the wall.
Yep.
And
exactly.
Then this whole train. So basically adhesion is the first person jumping up the wall. And then cohesion is grabbing the second person and pulling that water molecule up the wall. And then that will attach to another one and they'll keep pulling each other.
This is so cool. Yep.
Never thought of that. That's the most brilliant thing I've ever said in my whole life.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's actually very good. Yeah.
You can use it in your future classes. Yes. You have to plug Bloom and Grow Radio every time to get me new listeners, okay?
Well, no.
That's brilliant. Okay, cool. Okay, I finally understand cohesion and adhesion. Okay, so here's my thought with bottom watering, because everybody says like it wicks up just the right amount and it doesn't wick up more. So it just goes to the point of saturation where it can't be oversaturated.
Exactly, because it only has a particular volume of pore space, right? So it takes up as much as it can, but then there's no capacity to hold more.
Got it. So you can't over bottom water a plant. If I accidentally put a plant in a pot and, you know, if I started bottom watering a plant and then I forgot about it and I left it there for like a day, I can't over bottom water. It's just that there would be water remaining in the original pot that isn't the plant pot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Ideally, yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. I mean, I'm such a believer of bottom watering. I also feel like I'm so lazy and I have so many plants that it's so easy to throw a bunch of pots in a thing of water and have them all bottom water together.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's more efficient as well.
It is. But another thing actually, you just reminded me, over time, if you only do bottom watering, we may cause some issues because with this water rising up, there's also opportunity for salt to build up in the top layer.
Okay.
So because the water contains some minerals, it's normal. We should not use distilled water. And the water that we use would have some minerals. And over time, we build it up and it didn't cause toxicity to plants. When we water from top bottom, then we cause leaching of the salt. So it's good to have a mix of watering technique so you don't have this buildup of salt. Because sometimes you see like a top layer is like very white. Yeah.
So, especially in New York. Because a lot of the tap water that we're watering our plants with has that weird calcium and like other stuff. So if you bottom water, it's good to give your plants almost a flush. Like give them a really good top water and make sure like the water runs through the bottom of the pot. Okay.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, causing the leaching of the salts.
Cool. I just had this weird moment where I'm like, for my job, I'm talking to a scientist about the science of water wicking up soil. Like that is so nerdy and specific.
No.
And let's wait, because we're about to get even nerdier. Because my favorite thing that I learned in your class is about something called the perched water table. And I was so interested about it, I actually did a presentation on it.
Yeah.
In soil science.
That was so awesome to see this, the experiments that you prepared.
I did so many experiments. And I'm actually, it's going to be the companion YouTube video to this episode. I'm going to do the experiments for my YouTube class. Sorry, I'm going to do the experiments for my YouTube show that we did in class. So, okay, the perched water table concept blew my mind as a houseplant parent because I feel like we say 90% of plant death is always from overwatering, but I actually feel like 90% of plant death is from not understanding the perched water table in your container. So let me see how much I could regurgitate
of
my presentation, and then you can kind of fill in the science, the backside of it. So we water our soil and our plants, and there's this concept that you should put, if you have a pot with no drainage at the bottom, simply put stones in the bottom of the pot and then put soil on top of that. And the water will trickle from the soil into the stones and sit in the stones and then eventually evaporate. And the theory works, and this is unfortunately something that I used to tell people to do all the time before I knew any better. But there is something in science, and it actually has to do with cohesion and adhesion, that when water is going from one medium to another medium, there's like a little backlog. So the water, if I have a pot and it's 50% soil and 50% stones, when the water travels down through the bottom of the soil, there is going to be water that remains at the top of the soil, not in the stones. So 75% of the water will make it through the soil and collect in the stones, no problem. So that theory is right. But the remainder of that water is going to get stuck in the bottom of the soil. I guess because of cohesion, it's like defying gravity and it's getting stuck at the bottom. So no matter what type of container we have, the bottom of the container, the bottom of the soil is going to be saturated with water.
Yeah.
So if you have a small container and you put stones at the bottom, then you are raising the closeness of that perched water table to the roots. So then you're putting those roots in jeopardy of sitting in the perched water table, which is saturated soil, which is essentially water.
Yep.
And then those roots are going to suffocate and die.
Exactly. You said it perfectly.
So just because I had a good teacher who sent me all the studies, I was like, can I read blog about this? And you were like, no, read these scientific studies.
Now it's like you found the answer to your own question.
Well, because you sent me the materials for it. But I think that's really interesting because I think we think that we're doing our plants a favor, but we're actually killing our plants, because especially with houseplant people, our containers are maybe 6 inches deep. I mean, we have small containers. So that perched water table, even without stones, is going to really run the risk of being close to our roots. So if we're then raising where that perched water table is going to sit, we're really putting our plants in jeopardy.
Yeah. And you should also avoid using a small or like short, for the same reason, short containers, because depth, like 6 inches versus 2 inches, is the height of the table is going to be the same. Right? So, but with 6 inches, you still give opportunity for your roots to survive. And in 2 inches, it's really, there's only like 2% of air will be left, whereas in 6 inches will be like 20% air left. So it's really beneficial if you have a trouble with the perched water table to have a tall containers. This way roots can still survive.
Have a tall container and fill it all the way with soil.
Yeah, soil will handle it. It's not really necessary to do rocks or like gravel at the bottom.
Right. You have to really think about how deep your plant's roots are going to sit in that pot and make sure that that is not going to be in jeopardy of the perched water table. So I know that this is a hard example to listen to audio style. So head over to the YouTube show and watch the video that I've made where it's going to be much more clear on what we just explained. But basically what you should know is don't do the lava rock thing. Unless it's a really, really deep container where your plants are going to have a good 6 inches of soil to sit in on top of those stones. And now the thing that I'm also recommending people to do is, instead of doing the lava rock trick, if you have a container that doesn't have drainage in the bottom, find a nursery pot that's the same size as that container and plant your plant in that container that has holes in the bottom. Water that and then put it back. Take it out of the cash pot, water it, and then put it back, because then you're going to give that extra level of what you would have lava rocks, you would give back to your plant in soil that will end up being saturated.
Yeah, exactly.
So freaking interesting. Any sciencey stuff you want to add to that?
I mean, you described it just perfectly. There's nothing really to add. And it's okay. Like in a natural environment, it's the same idea. There's like permeable layer and this perched water table on top, and it will have the same effect on plants.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So let's talk a little bit about, and then we can wrap up, but let's just talk about, I think some people think that the only way their plants get nutrients is through fertilizing, especially with houseplants. Like, you think you have to fertilize your plants. But really, the soil is the first place that those plants have the opportunity to get nutrients. So the nutrients are in the soil. how do they get into the plant? And what are those nutrients?
Yeah, so the nutrients that come from minerals and nutrients that come from organic matter. And nutrients that are already exist in ionic form, it's like in free form that plants can take right away. Mm. And those pools that I just described, like minerals, organic matter, and ions, are different time scale. So minerals over time will break down and releasing nutrients, and I will list which are, and then plants can take it. But it will take really long time. It's like geologically speaking, in like years, hundreds of years, thousands of years, depending what kind of minerals that they all have different decomposition time processes. And organic matter, it will within like weeks, months, you know, compost, it's a perfect example. It releases nutrients quite quickly. And ions are already those nutrients that in the salt solution, it's like, I like the comparison with soup. Like we add table salt, which is halite, it's a mineral, sodium chloride. When we put it in the soup, they become ions. We don't see them with naked eye, but we taste it, right? It's salty. And sodium and chloride became ions. And this form, plants can take nutrients. And this typically exists in the soil solution. So how plants can actually take this? There are three different mechanisms. It's called the root interception, mass flow, and diffusion. In simple words, root interception is roots grow in the soil that contains nutrients. So it's like clay that has nutrients on the surface, and then it separates, it's like take it from the clay and absorbs it. Mass flow is when nutrients are carried by roots, by water flowing towards it. So just like by water flow, like soup. Or diffusion is ions exist in the soil and it will grow, move from high gradient to low gradient. So when the high concentration of gradient, high concentration of nutrients, it will move towards the roots when there is low concentration of these nutrients. And then plant will uptake it. And the nutrients become available, go like organic matter is available, minerals, the fungi can provide, they actually mine rocks. Fungi are really cool. They can break down the rock, mine for zinc, copper, phosphorus, and deliver it to the plant.
Wow.
Yeah, and so what are the nutrients? Those are coming from rocks that you just mentioned. Nitrogen is a super important nutrient. It's in the air. It's 78% of air is made of nitrogen, not oxygen. Oxygen is only 21%. But this nitrogen is not available to plants. Mm-hmm. Plants need it in ammonia or nitrate form, and that's where bacteria are super useful because they create symbiotic relationship with roots, and they convert nitrogen in the form available for plants. And only in that form plant can use it.
That's nitrification, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Or nitrogen fixation by bacteria.
Mm-hmm. The nitrogen cycle. It's a whole thing you learn about in soil science.
Exactly. And it's so complex. Scientists study for decades. It's really complicated and complex. Mm-hmm. So some other nutrients, well, they actually classify the macro and micronutrients. Mm-hmm. Macronutrients are nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. They are required by plants in a very large quantities. That's why they're called major nutrients. They're followed by calcium, magnesium, and sulfur. They're called secondary nutrients because they're also required in relatively high concentrations. And then we have micronutrients. It's boron, chlorine, copper, iron, manganese, molybdenum, zinc, sometimes nickel. Sometimes sodium and silicon considered as nutrients, but like beneficiary nutrients. Only certain plants would require them. These micronutrients are just as important as macronutrients, but they're required in a very tiny amount because they can easily become toxic to plants or organisms. And it's really, people need to be careful how much they add to the soil. And we can test easily with like simple, cheap soil kits, nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus. It's available on the market. For other nutrients, we would need to send it to the lab because we need some advanced techniques to extract and see how much we have in the trace concentrations for this micronutrients. But those are the essential nutrients, and they're really up to 17 out of the over 90 that exist in nature. Mm-hmm. And plants don't need the other nutrients, other elements.
But for plants in general, the big three that we talk about are NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Yeah, because they're required by plants in the largest amount.
Right.
Yeah.
And nitrogen being more for vegetative growth, phosphorus being more for blooming, and then
root growth,
potassium
as well,
for like a bunch of stuff. But that's why on fertilizer, sometimes when you see those numbers, if the first number is larger, that's nitrogen. If the second number is larger, mm-hmm. that's phosphorus. So it's like either for leaves or for flowers.
Yeah, you need to know what you're targeting. And then also how much you already have on the soil and buy the fertilizer with the ratio that matches. Mm-hmm. If you have lots of nitrogen, so you should buy fertilizer with the zero in the first yeah. place. And then only potassium and phosphorus.
I think that's like one of the biggest recommendations that I've heard over and over again now in every class that I've taken is if you have property, get a soil test done.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not that hard. So if we have listeners who are interested in, because if you test your soil, your government does it for a very affordable price. They send you back exactly what the breakdown of your soil is. And then they also tell you how and why to amend it. So like, that's amazing information. So how does someone go about getting that test done?
Well, I work at the university lab and I know like that's how university labs work. Mm-hmm. So you basically just find the one in your area or any actually lab in the country. In Brooklyn, we got from like samples from California or Rhode Island, anywhere. And you just, I think this university are more affordable than commercial labs.
Okay.
Because we are not try really monetizing it, just rather making this available to the public, the services. And people just look up the lab they want to send it to. They see the instructions the website provides, how to collect the soil sample and how to pack it. Mm-hmm. Typically, you put it in a Ziploc bag and ship it to the lab. And depending on what you need to test for, you would need to be mindful how you prepare the soil. There may be special instructions if you want to test for live organisms or for like nitrogen, it needs to be fresh. But if it's only for contaminants or some soil texture, it's not really much of preparation. So read on the website instructions that regarding to the test you want to have. And different universities or commercial labs will have different type of tests. So they're not all the same. Some of them are the same, like heavy metals or soil texture, how much organic in the soil, like NPK, but then there will be some specialized that some labs do and some don't, like microbial or like fungi ratios or looking specifically like plant health. So yeah, you need to do a little bit of research to see what lab is best for you based on your needs. And right now the lab testing is really affordable and it's really great investment because one, for agriculture, and two, if you have people have children, then they need to be healthy soils for healthy communities. Yeah. Because
if you live anywhere in the New York City area or the New York area and you have children, you should definitely get your, after taking your class, I'm like, definitely get your soil checked.
Yeah, it's a really very smart investment.
Yeah. Well, this was so helpful. And I want to grab that adhesion cohesion sound bit and make like a blurb out of it. So you have so many free, amazing resources for us. You teach also great classes. I know that you're probably going to have some really cool classes and seminars coming up. So if we want to keep in tune with what you're offering and where you're teaching and how you're educating, where can we find you and stay connected with you?
Yeah, thank you for that. Definitely follow me on Instagram. It's soil_expert. Just look up soil expert, you will find me. You could check my newly designed website. It's annapeltseva.com. So my first and last name, Anna Peltseva, where I will be posting my upcoming talks or webinars, where you can also learn about my current and past research and collaboration with artists. It's also something I've been engaged with. My research, my publications, my public features. And so basically two main avenues.
The website and the Instagram. It'll be in the show notes. So make sure go click and give Anya a follow because I've learned so much from you and I'm so thankful for that class. I can't recommend Soil Science 101 enough with NYBG and you. So thank you so much. And until next time.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
Whew. I hope you took as much from this conversation as I did. Like I said, I'm a little embarrassed at how much I talked and how nerdy and enthusiastic I was. But at the same time, you know what? I'm not, because that's how excited I was. And I'm so happy that I got to use this podcast to share that knowledge with you guys so you can learn alongside me. Thank you so much to the New York Botanical Garden for letting me take these classes. And to Anya, if you are interested in taking any virtual courses, I cannot recommend them enough, plant friends. Check out the link to the New York Botanical Garden at home online hub, where you can check out all of their virtual electronic resources that they are offering, as well as these courses that I cannot stop raving about. Thank you to Dr. Paltseva. All of her info is in the show notes. Make sure that you check out the accompanying YouTube video on drainage that I made. Thank you again to our Patreon Plant Friend supporters. If you're interested in supporting the show, click the link in the show notes. And thank you again to our episode sponsor, Espoma Organics. If you need indoor or outdoor gardening solutions, whether it's potting soil, garden soil, compost, fertilizers, horticultural sprays, or my favorite liquid fertilizers that they have, Espoma Organics has the gardening solution for you. Check out espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or check the link in the show notes to see my Amazon store with my favorite picks. Plant friends, I hope you get out and enjoy nature. I hope you enjoy your houseplants this week. Take a minute, rest those eyes. We've all been staring at screens for so long. Take your eyes off your screens, put them on your plants, take a 5-minute break, take some deep breaths, look at your plants, look at the leaves, get lost in wonder at the marvel of how awesome these plant babies that we have are and how much they are helping us. I hope you have a wonderfully planty week, and I can't wait until next episode. Until then, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind-the-scenes sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you're loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, plant friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up, so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya, and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.